Earthquakes, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. Desire. Mendicants, there are 8 kinds of people found in the world. What 8? First, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But material possessions don't come to them. And so they sorrow and wail and lament, beating their breast and falling into confusion because they don't get those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But when possessions don't come to them, they sorrow and lament. They've fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And material possessions do come to them. And so they become indulgent and fall into negligence regarding those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And when possessions come to them, they become intoxicated and negligent. They've fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And material possessions don't come to them. And so they sorrow and wail and lament, beating their breast and falling into confusion because they don't get those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And when possessions don't come to them, they sorrow and lament. They've fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But material possessions do come to them. And so they become indulgent and fall into negligence regarding those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But when possessions come to them, they become intoxicated and negligent. They've fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But material possessions don't come to them. But they don't sorrow and wail and lament, beating their breast and falling into confusion because they don't get those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But when possessions don't come to them, they don't sorrow and lament. They haven't fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And material possessions do come to them, but they don't become indulgent and fall into negligence regarding those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But when possessions come to them, they don't become intoxicated and negligent. They haven't fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, a desire arises for material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And material possessions don't come to them. But they don't sorrow and wail and lament, beating their breast and falling into confusion because they don't get those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And when possessions don't come to them, they don't sorrow and lament. They haven't fallen from the true teaching. Next, when a mendicant stays secluded, living independently, A desire arises for material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. But material possessions do come to them. But they don't become indulgent and fall into negligence regarding those material possessions. This is called a mendicant who lives desiring material possessions. They don't try hard, strive, and make an effort to get them. And when possessions come to them, they don't become intoxicated and negligent. They haven't fallen from the true teaching. These are the eight people found in the world. Good enough. Mendicants, a mendicant with six qualities is good enough for themselves and others. What six? A mendicant is quick-witted when it comes to skillful teachings. They readily memorize the teachings they've heard. They examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they practice accordingly. They're a good speaker. Their voice is polished, clear, articulate, and expresses the meaning. They educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these six qualities is good enough for themselves and others. A mendicant with five qualities is good enough for themselves and others. What five? A mendicant is not quick-witted when it comes to skillful teachings. They readily memorize the teachings they've heard. They examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they practice accordingly. They're a good speaker. Their voice is polished, clear, articulate, and expresses the meaning. They educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these five qualities is good enough for themselves and others. A mendicant with four qualities is good enough for themselves, but not for others. What for? A mendicant is quick-witted when it comes to skillful teachings. They readily memorize the teachings they've heard. They examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they practice accordingly. But they're not a good speaker. Their voice isn't polished, clear, articulate, and doesn't express the meaning. They don't educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these four qualities is good enough for themselves, but not for others. A mendicant with four qualities is good enough for others, but not for themselves. What for? A mendicant is quick-witted when it comes to skillful teachings. They readily memorize the teachings they've heard, but they don't examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they don't practice accordingly. They're a good speaker. Their voice is polished, clear, articulate, and expresses the meaning. They educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these four qualities is good enough for others, but not for themselves. A mendicant with three qualities is good enough for themselves, but not for others. What three? A mendicant is not quick-witted when it comes to skillful teachings. They readily memorize the teachings they've heard. They examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they practice accordingly, but they're not a good speaker. Their voice isn't polished, clear, articulate, and doesn't express the meaning. They don't educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these three qualities is good enough for themselves, but not for others. A mendicant with three qualities is good enough for others, but not for themselves. What three? A mendicant is not quick-witted when it comes to skillful teachings. They readily memorize the teachings they've heard, but they don't examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they don't practice accordingly. They're a good speaker. Their voice is polished, clear, articulate, and expresses the meaning. They educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these three qualities is good enough for others, but not for themselves. A mendicant with two qualities is good enough for themselves, but not for others. What to? A mendicant is not quick-witted when it comes to skilful teachings, and they don't readily memorize the teachings they've heard. But they examine the meaning of teachings they have memorized, understanding the meaning and the teaching they practice accordingly. They're not a good speaker. Their voice isn't polished, clear, articulate, and doesn't express the meaning. They don't educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these two qualities is good enough for themselves, but not for others. A mendicant with two qualities is good enough for others, but not for themselves. What to? A mendicant is not quick-witted when it comes to skilful teachings, and they don't readily memorize the teachings they've heard, nor do they examine the meaning of teachings they've memorized. Understanding the meaning and the teaching, they don't practice accordingly. But they're a good speaker. Their voice is polished, clear, articulate, and expresses the meaning. They educate, encourage, fire up, and inspire their spiritual companions. A mendicant with these two qualities is good enough for others, but not for themselves. A teaching in brief. Then a mendicant went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, "Sir, may the Buddha please teach me Dhamma in brief. When I've heard it, I'll live alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen and resolute." This is exactly how some foolish people ask me for something. But when the teaching has been explained, they think only of following me around. "Sir, may the Buddha please teach me Dhamma in brief. May the Holy One teach me the Dhamma in brief. Hopefully I can understand the meaning of what the Buddha says. Hopefully I can be an heir of the Buddha's teaching." "Well then, mendicant, you should train like this. My mind will be steady and well settled internally, and bad, unskillful qualities that have arisen will not occupy my mind." That's how you should train. When your mind is steady and well settled internally, and bad, unskillful qualities that have arisen don't occupy your mind, then you should train like this. "I will develop the heart's release by love. I'll cultivate it, make it my vehicle and my basis, keep it up, consolidate it, and properly implement it." That's how you should train. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should develop it while placing the mind and keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind, merely keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind or keeping it connected. You should develop it with rapture. You should develop it without rapture. You should develop it with pleasure. You should develop it with equanimity. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should train like this. "I will develop the heart's release by compassion. I will develop the heart's release by rejoicing. I will develop the heart's release by equanimity. I'll cultivate it, make it my vehicle and my basis, keep it up, consolidate it, and properly implement it." That's how you should train. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should develop it while placing the mind and keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind, merely keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind or keeping it connected. You should develop it with rapture. You should develop it without rapture. You should develop it with pleasure. You should develop it with equanimity. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should train like this. "I'll meditate, observing an aspect of the body, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of covetousness and displeasure for the world." That's how you should train. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should develop it while placing the mind and keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind, merely keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind or keeping it connected. You should develop it with rapture. You should develop it without rapture. You should develop it with pleasure. You should develop it with equanimity. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should train like this. I'll meditate on an aspect of feelings. I'll meditate on an aspect of the mind. I'll meditate on an aspect of principles, keen, aware, and mindful, rid of covetousness and displeasure for the world. That's how you should train. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, you should develop it while placing the mind and keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind, merely keeping it connected. You should develop it without placing the mind or keeping it connected. You should develop it with rapture. You should develop it without rapture. You should develop it with pleasure. You should develop it with equanimity. When this immersion is well developed and cultivated in this way, wherever you walk, you'll walk comfortably. Wherever you stand, you'll stand comfortably. Wherever you sit, you'll sit comfortably. Wherever you lie down, you'll lie down comfortably. When that mendicant had been given this advice by the Buddha, he got up from his seat, bowed, and respectfully circled the Buddha, keeping him on his right before leaving. Then that mendicant, living alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen, and resolute, soon realized the supreme culmination of the spiritual path in this very life. He lived, having achieved with his own insight the goal for which gentlemen rightly go forth from the lay life to homelessness. He understood rebirth is ended. The spiritual journey has been completed. What had to be done has been done. There is no return to any state of existence. And that mendicant became one of the perfected. At Gaya Head. At one time the Buddha was staying near Gaya on Gaya Head. There the Buddha addressed the mendicants. Mendicants, before my awakening, when I was still not awake but intent on awakening, I perceived light but did not see forms. Then it occurred to me, what if I were to both perceive light and see forms? Then my knowledge and vision would become even more purified. So after some time, living alone, withdrawn, diligent, keen and resolute, I perceived light and saw visions, but I didn't associate with those deities, converse, or engage in discussion. Then it occurred to me, what if I were to perceive light and see forms and associate with those deities, converse, and engage in discussion? Then my knowledge and vision would become even more purified. So after some time I perceived light and saw visions, and I associated with those deities, conversed and engaged in discussion. But I didn't know which order of gods those deities came from. Then it occurred to me, what if I were to perceive light and see forms, and associate with those deities, converse and engage in discussion, and find out which orders of gods those deities came from? Then my knowledge and vision would become even more purified. So after some time I perceived light and saw visions, and I associated with those deities, and I found out which orders of gods those deities came from, but I didn't know what deeds caused those deities to be reborn there after passing away from here. So after some time I found out what deeds caused those deities to be reborn there after passing away from here. But I didn't know what deeds caused those deities to have such food and such an experience of pleasure and pain. So after some time, I found out what deeds caused those deities to have such food and such an experience of pleasure and pain. But I didn't know that these deities have a lifespan of such a length. So after some time I found out that these deities have a lifespan of such a length. But I didn't know whether or not I had previously lived together with those deities. Then it occurred to me, What if I were to perceive light and see forms and associate with those deities, converse and engage in discussion, and find out which orders of gods those deities come from, and what deeds caused those deities to be reborn there after passing away from here, and what deeds caused those deities to have such food and such an experience of pleasure and pain, and that these deities have a lifespan of such a length, and whether or not I have previously lived together with those deities, then my knowledge and vision would become even more purified. So after some time, I found out whether or not I have previously lived together with those deities. As long as my knowledge and vision about the deities was not fully purified in these 8 rounds, I didn't announce my supreme perfect awakening in this world with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, its gods and humans. But when my knowledge and vision about the deities was fully purified in these 8 rounds, I announced my supreme perfect awakening in this world with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, its gods and humans. Knowledge and vision arose in me. My freedom is unshakable. This is my last rebirth. Now there'll be no more future lives. Dimensions of Mastery. Mendicants, there are these 8 dimensions of mastery. What 8? Perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, limited, both pretty and ugly. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the first dimension of mastery. Perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, limitless, both pretty and ugly. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the second dimension of mastery. Not perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, limited, both pretty and ugly. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the third dimension of mastery. Not perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, limitless, both pretty and ugly. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the fourth dimension of mastery. Not perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, blue, with blue colour and blue appearance. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the fifth dimension of mastery. Not perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, yellow, with yellow colour and yellow appearance. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the sixth dimension of mastery. Not perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, red, with red colour and red appearance. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the seventh dimension of mastery. Not perceiving form internally, someone sees forms externally, white, with white colour and white appearance. Mastering them, they perceive, I know and see. This is the eighth dimension of mastery. These are the 8 dimensions of mastery. Liberations. Mendicants, there are these 8 liberations. What 8? Having physical form, they see forms. This is the first liberation. Not perceiving form internally, they see forms externally. This is the second liberation. They're focused only on beauty. This is the third liberation. Going totally beyond perceptions of form, with the ending of perceptions of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, they enter and remain in the dimension of infinite space. This is the fourth liberation. Going totally beyond the dimension of infinite space, aware that consciousness is infinite, they enter and remain in the dimension of infinite consciousness. This is the fifth liberation. Going totally beyond the dimension of infinite consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all, they enter and remain in the dimension of nothingness. This is the sixth liberation. Going totally beyond the dimension of nothingness, they enter and remain in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. This is the seventh liberation. Going totally beyond the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, they enter and remain in the cessation of perception and feeling. This is the eighth liberation. These are the eight liberations. Ignoble expressions. Mendicants, there are these eight ignoble expressions. What eight? Saying you've seen, heard, thought, or known something, but you haven't. And saying you haven't seen, heard, thought, or known something, and you have. These are the eight ignoble expressions. Noble expressions. Mendicants, there are these eight noble expressions. What eight? Saying you haven't seen, heard, thought, or known something, and you haven't. And saying you've seen, heard, thought, or known something, and you have. These are the eight noble expressions. Assemblies. Mendicants, there are these eight assemblies. What eight? The assemblies of aristocrats, Brahmins, householders, and ascetics. An assembly of the gods under the four great kings. An assembly of the gods under the 33. An assembly of Maras. An assembly of Brahmas. I recall having approached an assembly of hundreds of aristocrats. There I used to sit with them, converse, and engage in discussion, and my appearance and voice became just like theirs. I educated, encouraged, fired up, and inspired them with the Dhamma talk. But when I spoke, they didn't know, who is this that speaks? Is it a god or a human? And when my Dhamma talk was finished, I vanished. But when I vanished, they didn't know, who was that who vanished? Was it a god or a human? I recall having approached an assembly of hundreds of Brahmins, householders, ascetics, the gods under the four great kings, the gods under the 33, Maras, Brahmas. There too I used to sit with them, converse, and engage in discussion, and my appearance and voice became just like theirs. I educated, encouraged, fired up, and inspired them with a Dhamma talk. But when I spoke, they didn't know, who is this that speaks? Is it a god or a human? And when my Dhamma talk was finished, I vanished. But when I vanished, they didn't know, who was that who vanished? Was it a god or a human? These are the eight assemblies. Earthquakes. At one time the Buddha was staying near Vasali at the great wood, in the hall with the peaked roof. Then the Buddha robed up in the morning and, taking his bowl and robe, entered Vasali for alms. Then, after the meal, on his return from alms round, he addressed Venerable Ananda. Ananda, get your sitting cloth. Let's go to the Karpala shrine for the day's meditation. Yes, sir, replied Ananda. Taking his sitting cloth, he followed behind the Buddha. Then the Buddha went up to the Karpala shrine, where he sat on the seat spread out. When he was seated, he said to Venerable Ananda, Ananda, Vasali is lovely, and the Udaina, Gotamaka, seven maidens, many sons, Sarandada, and Karpala tree shrines are all lovely. Whoever has developed and cultivated the four bases of psychic power, made them a vehicle and a basis, kept them up, consolidated them, and properly implemented them, may, if they wish, live for the proper lifespan or what's left of it. The realized one has developed and cultivated the four bases of psychic power, made them a vehicle and a basis, kept them up, consolidated them, and properly implemented them. If he wished, the realized one could live for the proper lifespan or what's left of it. But Ananda didn't get it. Even though the Buddha dropped such an obvious hint, such a clear sign, he didn't beg the Buddha, "Sir, may the Blessed One please remain for the aeon. May the Holy One please remain for the aeon. That would be for the welfare and happiness of the people, out of compassion for the world, for the benefit, welfare and happiness of gods and humans." For his mind was as if possessed by Mara. For a second time, and for a third time, the Buddha said to him, "Ananda, Vasali is lovely, and the Udena, Gotamaka, seven maidens, many sons, Sarandada, and Karpala tree shrines are all lovely. Whoever has developed and cultivated the four bases of psychic power, made them a vehicle and a basis, kept them up, consolidated them, and properly implemented them, may, if they wish, live for the proper lifespan or what's left of it. The realized one has developed and cultivated the four bases of psychic power, made them a vehicle and a basis, kept them up, consolidated them, and properly implemented them. If he wished, the realized one could live for the proper lifespan or what's left of it." But Ananda didn't get it. Even though the Buddha dropped such an obvious hint, such a clear sign, he didn't beg the Buddha, "Sir, may the Blessed One please remain for the aeon. May the Holy One please remain for the aeon. That would be for the welfare and happiness of the people, out of compassion for the world, for the benefit, welfare and happiness of gods and humans." For his mind was as if possessed by Mara. Then the Buddha said to Venerable Ananda, "Go now, Ananda, at your convenience." "Yes, sir," replied Ananda. He rose from his seat, bowed, and respectfully circled the Buddha, keeping him on his right before sitting at the root of a tree close by. And then, not long after Ananda had left, Mara the Wicked said to the Buddha, "Sir, may the Blessed One now become fully extinguished. May the Holy One now become fully extinguished. Now is the time for the Buddha to become fully extinguished." "Sir, you once made this statement, 'Wicked One, I shall not become fully extinguished until I have monk disciples who are competent, educated, assured, learned, have memorized the teachings, and practice in line with the teachings. Not until they practice appropriately, living in line with the teaching, not until they have learned their tradition and explain, teach, assert, establish, clarify, analyze, and reveal, not until they can legitimately and completely refute the doctrines of others that come up and teach with a demonstrable basis. Today, you do have such monk disciples. May the Blessed One now become fully extinguished. May the Holy One now become fully extinguished. Now is the time for the Buddha to become fully extinguished." "Sir, you once made this statement, 'Wicked One, I shall not become fully extinguished until I have none disciples who are competent, educated, assured, learned.' Wicked One, I shall not become fully extinguished until I have layman disciples who are competent, educated, assured, learned. Wicked One, I shall not become fully extinguished until I have laywoman disciples who are competent, educated, assured, learned. Today you do have such laywoman disciples. Sir, may the Blessed One now become fully extinguished. May the Holy One become fully extinguished. Now is the time for the Buddha to become fully extinguished. Sir, you once made this statement, Wicked one, I shall not become fully extinguished until my spiritual path is successful and prosperous, extensive, popular, widespread, and well proclaimed wherever there are gods and humans. Today your spiritual path is successful and prosperous, extensive, popular, widespread, and well proclaimed wherever there are gods and humans. Sir, may the Blessed One now become fully extinguished. May the Holy One become fully extinguished. Now is the time for the Buddha to become fully extinguished. Relax, Wicked One. The final extinguishment of the Realized One will be soon. 3 months from now, the Realized One will finally be extinguished. So, at the Kapala Tree Shrine, the Buddha, mindful and aware, surrendered the life force. When he did so, there was a great earthquake, awe-inspiring and hair-raising, and thunder cracked the sky. Then, understanding this matter on that occasion, the Buddha expressed this heartfelt sentiment. Comparing the incomparable with the creation of prolonged life, the sage surrendered the life force. Happy inside, serene, he shattered self-creation like a suit of armour. Then Venerable Ananda thought, that was a really big earthquake. That was really a very big earthquake, awe-inspiring and hair-raising, and thunder cracked the sky. What's the cause? What's the reason for a great earthquake? Then Venerable Ananda went up to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side and said to him, Sir, that was a really big earthquake. That was really a very big earthquake, awe-inspiring and hair-raising, and thunder cracked the sky. What's the cause? What's the reason for a great earthquake? Ananda, there are these 8 causes and reasons for a great earthquake. What 8? This great earth is grounded on water. The water is grounded on air, and the air stands in space. At a time when a great wind blows, it stirs the water, and the water stirs the earth. This is the first cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, there is an ascetic or Brahmin with psychic power who has achieved mastery of the mind, or a god who is mighty and powerful. They developed a limited perception of earth and a limitless perception of water. They make the earth shake and rock and tremble. This is the second cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, when the being intent on awakening passes away from the host of joyful gods, he's conceived in his mother's belly, mindful and aware. Then the earth shakes and rocks and trembles. This is the third cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, when the being intent on awakening comes out of his mother's belly, mindful and aware, the earth shakes and rocks and trembles. This is the fourth cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, when the realized one realizes the supreme perfect awakening, the earth shakes and rocks and trembles. This is the fifth cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, when the realized one rolls forth the supreme wheel of Dhamma, the earth shakes and rocks and trembles. This is the sixth cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, when the realized one, mindful and aware, surrenders the life force, the earth shakes and rocks and trembles. This is the seventh cause and reason for a great earthquake. Furthermore, when the realized one becomes fully extinguished in the element of extinguishment with nothing left over, the earth shakes and rocks and trembles. This is the eighth cause and reason for a great earthquake. These are the 8 causes and reasons for a great earthquake.